forum on nuclear waste disposal or nuclear waste management, and it'll probably get into even more waste than that before we get done. I'm not exactly going to moderate it, but I'm going to introduce the people who are going to be handling it. But before I do that, I want to take advantage of one prerogative. This is the first time I've ever introduced anything relative to nuclear anything. And I'd like to imbibe one of my pet peeves, and that is, before anybody says anything, that we get clear how you pronounce nuclear. Okay? So it's pronounced nuclear, not nuclear. Let's all say that together. Nuclear, not nuclear. Okay, if you listen to President Carter does it differently. He says nuclear. But either I'm right, even though he's a nuclear physicist. Talk about nuclear energy. But it's nuclear. I'm going to make one try at that, because it seems to me that there are so few people that say it right that we might as well change it to nuclear, because that's not a word anyway being used by anybody else. We might as well do. But this is on nuclear waste management. Bill Simpkins, is his field is geology. He's with the Bureau of Economic Geology in Austin, Texas. I've never heard of that one. Sounds like rocks for sale. And Rudy Edmund is a longtime geologist and currently and most recently with California Lutheran College in Thousand Oaks. And Leo Busted is Leo, and he's into a lot of things, and he's the dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine at Washington State University in Pullman, and has done quite a bit with the effects of radiation on animal life. Is that correct? Good. So I would suggest that each of the guys have a chance to make a sort of an opening statement, but that it not be too long of an opening statement, so that we can have some time for some questions and conversations on the general area of this broad topic. And Rudy, if you kind of want to pick it up from there and see who goes first or whatever.
Okay, I would like to sort of broaden the base of our thinking tonight so that we think about all wastes that are related to the use of energy. And I think if we think of it in those terms, then we'll broaden this to where we put some things into perspective as we go along. Finally, we're going to wind up with talking about nuclear waste and the problems that go with the management of that. But let's just think first of what man has used in the way of energy in the past. And if we think of first of domesticating animals, what's the waste product that goes with horses?
is it a waste?
Okay. Well, okay, but there is a waste product that goes with the use of a horse for energy purposes, and it's horse manure. So we'll just have that straight. Then if you go to burning of wood, what's the waste product? It's ash,
carbon dioxide,
various kinds of smoke, and particulates in the atmosphere, and so there is a waste that goes with using wood as an energy source. If you go to coal, what do you come up with? Again, you come up with smoke and ash and cinders and various kinds of chemicals that are put into the atmosphere, and here again is a waste that is not natural in the environment, and therefore is called pollution. Petroleum, and we're acquainted with that, and there are all kinds of wastes that are associated with petroleum. And those of us who come from California are particularly aware of what happens in terms of smog. And so we get smog, and we get various kinds of pollutants into the atmosphere. Waste products. And they're the thing that's left over after the car has generated its speed and it's going down the highway. It leaves behind waste. And natural gas, the same way. So any way in which we burn petroleum or natural gas, we generate a product which is a side effect, but it's a waste product. Then the various forms of energy that are clean. We say the water, hydro plants, you see, where you use the energy of falling water, running water, so on. This is a clean source of energy. And if you break the water down in various ways, you get hydrogen. And hydrogen now is one of the things that we're thinking about using as a source of energy, and it will have its particular waste byproduct that goes with that. We're also into now thinking about generating energy from synthetic sources or energy that's produced from other material. Such as gasohol, and you've heard of this, and it's very much one of the current things that we're doing. Alcohol, you see, and generating various kinds of things from coal. And so, very synthesizing, and then burning again, but again, there are waste products. And so, we finally then come to where we consider the atom. And as you deal with the atom, again, we have a waste product. And what do we do with it? Well, the atomic waste happens to be something that's a little different to handle in the environment, simply because any kind of waste that's radioactive is completely unnatural in the biosphere, and it's lethal to any kind of plant or animal life in which it comes in contact. So it's different than the ash. It's different from the particulate matter that we get from burning fossil fuels. And so we have different problems, but we're dealing with waste. And it's just one of the things that we have to put into perspective. One of the wastes, just to kind of get these out, and then we can talk about them. Well, one of the wastes is simply hot water, simply heating up the water in connection with an atomic plant. You have to keep it cool to keep from having the China syndrome. And when you begin to think of that, what keeps things cool? Generally, it's circulating water. And the water then released to the environment has a waste product that must be dealt with and must be managed. Radioactive wastes of various kinds are a product of radioactive disintegration, which goes on naturally, and once you concentrate this in the environment, then you create certain hazards and certain problems where the biosphere is concerned. Now, what do we do with these wastes? Currently, the wastes are being stored on the surface, essentially. The big bulk of them are being collected. And we can talk more about that, but just to kind of get the perspective of what's happening. We're storing these mainly for the reason that we do not know the best way to treat them when you think of the future. And the future is a long time. And these wastes are injurious to the biosphere for a long time. I mean thousands of years in some cases. So where should we put them to be sure that they do not do damage? That's the real question that confronts us today as we use this material. I had the opportunity to work with the Atomic Energy Commission back in the 1950s. And at that time, they were beginning to look for places where they might store low-grade energy and high radioactive energy, various kinds of levels of the radioactivity of this material. Well, the reason that I was involved was because at that time I was working with an oil company, and they were particularly interested in trying to find ways of disposing of this material into the subsurface, that is, into the ground below, so as to get it away from the biosphere, you see, simply bury it in the ground. Well, we spent several years, and I say we, I don't mean just myself, but geologists across the country that were involved in the search for oil and gas. Why? Because we knew more about the subsurface than anybody else. We had the data, and so we made it available to the government to consider. And in these studies, we recognized three major ways in which we might handle the storage of this material. One was to put it down into deep wells that were already dry holes. They had been drilled for oil, they had been unsuccessful, and they were now just holes in the ground. But we had data suggesting that there were many reservoirs at depth where you could put this material in, and it would take the material really on a vacuum, so that if you brought it to the surface of the earth where the hole was drilled, you could put it into a pipe and put it down to a formation which would be a mile deep, 2 miles deep, and put it into that, and then assume that it would not get out until the time was spent in which the radioactive disintegration would completely run out, disintegrate, and then it would be potable, that is, fresh water, so that it wouldn't contaminate anything. Well, we couldn't give exact times when this material would migrate away from a well boring. That would be obvious. But we thought it was possible to put it in certain basins, certain deep depressions within the Earth's crust, where the material would migrate so slowly that it would not get back to the surface for the period of time that it might take for the material to become harmless. And that was one source. Another way we suggested was that if they would put this material into a well, pump it down into what's called shale, that is just clay, mud, that you can force then, and we do this all the time in putting in cement into cementing an oil well. You could put this material into a mixture of cement and inject it back into shale in the subsurface, and put it out in that form, and it would not move, and it would stay there. That's another possibility. And the third, and probably the one that was most considered, was to put it into salt, to put it in beds of salt. And for example, around Salina, Kansas, around the places where they mine salt, we knew the thickness of the salt bed. And there were abandoned places in the normal mining for salt in that area where material could be put into the salt. And that was another place. So these were the various kinds of subsurface places that it might be put. Then there are various other kinds of disposal that suggested itself for this material. One was simply to put it into a rocket and shoot it back to the sun where it would be at home. You know, that's where the stuff came from. And it would not do any damage out there. But what's the problem? The problem is that sometimes these things fizzle. And they go up and they come back down. You know, and that's exactly what we wouldn't want to happen. And so nobody was willing to put a guarantee on any kind of a rocket load that would say it could be dispensed into space, into the realm of the solar field. Well, another place to put it is in the oceans. And that, in some instances, has probably been tried. That is, we know it's been tried. And the question is whether it's in a safe place when it's put into the ocean bed. So, this is kind of the perspective that I think we need to consider. Now, the other problem is that if we are to continue our lives in the technological kind of lifestyle that we have, we must have energy. That is, that's part and parcel of technology. And so if we're going to have automobiles and machinery and fabricated metals and petrochemicals and all of these kinds of things, it calls for energy, and it calls for then a management of the waste. And we have all kinds of problems related to each kind of energy that we're using. And the question is, what's the trade-off? Which one do we want, which waste is least bad? I guess that's probably the best way to put it. And which one can we manage and get the most energy for the least part of our problem in management? And I just think that maybe this kind of an opening up of the whole problem is perhaps in order. Now, I'd like for either Bill or Leo to make whatever comments you would like.
Well, it's kind of interesting what's happened in the last 20 years since Rudy's probably worked in this problem, because in the field of atomic waste, I guess back in the 50s, it was the kind of the philosophy of most of the people that we could possibly use salt, and salt might have been the place to put things as far as radioactive waste go. In recent years, since we finally got a Department of Energy, there's been a lot of money allotted for this particular problem in locating sites, particularly in southeastern New Mexico and areas which are otherwise, to most people, barren wastelands that contain a great deal of salt. Currently, the project that I'm working on is looking at a site in West Texas in a large basin with 4,000 feet of salt in it. And some of the problems which you must deal with in a situation like this is what will happen to a site like this during the time that we must wait in order for the waste to become, as Rudy says, potable. In other words, we have to look at a site and say, okay, what's going to happen to it in thousands of years? Will this land that is now a mile underground in 1,000 years be on the surface? Does this area have earthquakes? Does this area have particular hydrologic problems that will cause the salt to dissolve and eventually have waste canisters popping up on the surface? There's a great deal of problems that we're encountering with these with salt, and as a result, some of the people and some of the current research is kind of turning back to some other areas, mainly going back into more igneous rocks and things like basalt and granite and stuff like that, still using the idea of very deep wells. So that's kind of the background that I'm coming from at this point. And I'll let Leo say a couple of words here.
Turn it over to Leo here. He's more familiar with the problems of the biosphere than any of the rest of us, certainly Bill or myself, and maybe you could comment along those lines, Neil.
Yeah, I think you've given a very good introduction, Rudy, to the overall problem. I think we have to take it in perspective. I would make one comment on what you said, that these radioactive wastes are lethal. And somewhat different. We must realize that we were all raised and historically in a radioactive environment, and all of you, independent of the nuclear energy program initiated during my lifetime, you are all exposed to at this level, I suppose 100 and some millirentgens a year. If you're from Colorado, areas there that you're getting 250 or 300 millirentgens a year. If you're from certain areas of India, you get up to 4,000 millirentgens a year. And if you're down in Brazil, especially eating Brazilian nuts, you're probably somewhere in that range, several thousand. Added to this, of course, are your medical x-rays and so forth. If some of you were exposed to the shoe machines and checking out your feet of your little children, you're talking there about 40,000, 50,000, maybe up to 70,000 sometimes millirentgens to that area. Now, those of you who have full mouth x-rays every year, or your children some years ago, twice a year full mouth x-rays, and sometimes they were exposed, so they had to do it again. And sometimes the area exposed was this big, because I checked it out. You had this area exposed to I suppose, about sometimes up to 15,000 millirad at one exposure, and it's a lot worse to take it all at once than have it partitioned off so much a day. You said that all radiation is lethal or it has an effect. There was an interesting study done in France, and it's a very difficult study, to try to get to a radiation area where it's near nothing, it approaches nothing, less than ambient, okay? And the invertebrates they used didn't do as well as they did in normal background. Sorry to bring that to some of your attention who have other preconceived notions on this. Now, also, I should point out that as of now, the coal-burning plants for generating power are emitting generally more radiation than the nuclear. This may also shock some of you, but when you burn coal, there's radioactive material in it, and some of it's worse, such as radium and daughter products. So you have that problem. So you'll never be, this will never be absent from you. If you are those who are waiting for something great to happen and get probably fusion power where you have a nice clean source of energy, I don't hold out that much hope for you because we have to have quite a few technical breakthroughs. And when you're dealing with 15 MeV neutrons, that makes a lot of things radioactive. And they can get so radioactive, and then where are you going? That's also another waste.
Mm-hmm, right.
And where are you going to store that? I have some sympathy for the concerns of some that they have not developed yet, as far as some of you would like to see, the handling of nuclear waste. Because my neighbor, I spent quite a bit of time with General Electric Company at Hanford Laboratories, and much of my life was spent at the University of California teaching the bioenvironmental impact of energy generation. What is the impact on animals and people? And I spent most of my life in that. And that's the kind of work we were doing there. And a neighbor, early in the 50s, he came up with a calcining process for high-level waste. If we were completely nuclear in the United States today, the amount of radioactive, high-level radioactive waste calcined would equal about probably the size of the end of my thumb for every man, woman, and child. That's if everybody, if we lived it completely on nuclear power. So it gives you some scope of the high-level waste.
Per year, you mean?
That's right, per year. The hazards of radiation, it really defies my comprehension that what I read in the newspapers and in Lutheran publications like Sojourners, they're either completely ignorant or they're dishonest because there's more information known about the effects of radiation than any environmental hazard that I know. We speak of the hazards from coal burning, and I'm worried about, I'm really worried about them. Because they're undefined. My associates, my former laboratory that I directed at the University of California, are doing a lot in fly ash now. And a lot of that stuff's carcinogenic, of course. But pretty much undefined. We know it's killed a lot of people through the ages. We know, for example, in just in London over a 4-month period one time, you had, 4,000 excess deaths due to an inversion condition from burning coal. And here's one of the things you ought to do is to cut out of the paper each day for a year on all the people that lose their lives on energy generation. And I think you point out well, if you look at it from its source, and everybody's telling me we got to go to solar. Well, I think solar is great, but it's not without risk. Just people falling off their houses, putting up their... and you see, we laugh about that. And if somebody falls off the roof and kills them, they're just as dead as if you radiated them, huh? Aren't they?
Sure.
But it wouldn't make headlines. The other thing that concerns me about waste is that the ones I'm really worried about, knowing what I know, are those that don't have a half-life, like a lot of the radioactive ones. I'm worried about the ones that don't have a half-life. Cadmium, mercury, arsenic, lead, and things like asbestos. What's the biggest contributor on the colloids in the air? It's brake lining and rubber tires. I'm glad to see it's kind of slowing up, but there isn't as much of it these days. But there's a lot of gas fumes outside of the gas station. But these are a real issue that have caused a lot of deaths and the way they've stored them, and you can take all kinds of incidents. In Japan is a noteworthy one, and we got some in this country, and that's really serious. Now, I think some of the views of the energy experts, and I'm not in it, and I don't make a nickel on this, but is that the technology is being developed. Some of us thought they should have developed it faster, but you know they've now developed the glass, the preparations in glass of the radioactive materials, mm-hmm. and in the calcine procedures, and some of these look very reasonable, but we haven't had that much. You know, it's still in a manageable quantity that you have some time as far as improving on the developments of it before you have to utilize it. On the other aspect of it, I thought there was one other thing. I didn't sleep much last night. I came up to Holden this time, and it was going to be, we started off real great, and I was just coming up for the science committee. And I was going to be one of you in the science committee, and then Rudy says, "You're on nuclear waste tonight." and then Walt, bless his soul, says, "I'm on Vespers tomorrow night." So it's another short night. And the science committee expects me to say something tomorrow, but not very much. As chairman, you're not supposed to say much.
Leo,
yes.
Why don't you and I go off in the corner someplace and learn how to say no?
Yeah, that's right. My wife says the same thing. But she wouldn't have to put up with me if she had learned to say that. So I guess that's sort of where I thought there was something else I was going to be. Oh yeah, starting from the source. You know, I mentioned solar. All right, if you're going to hafnium, I've looked at quite a few solar plants. The one down the thing down in Albuquerque and Sandy Base, for example. And there's a lot of stuff there. And you have to look at now, what did it take to manufacture those? Huh? If you're going to hafnium collectors, what about hafnium and all of the stuff that goes into that, going back to the mining? So whenever you're looking at these hazards, you go back and start at point one and take it through, if you're really going to be honest about this. And if you're also going to be honest about it, you better study the facts on what we know about each of them. That's what I ask of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any waste with solar?
Oh, I'm sure there is. When you're manufacturing the various plates, there are waste materials from the time you mine whatever you're using, whether it's going to be steel and those who mine that, the coal that takes for the energy to produce the things, that's part of the waste, isn't it? Mm-hmm. For that process. Huh?
Yeah.
For all the metallurgy that takes to do it, that's all in it. And they're just as, you know, there's a certain risk to all of this.
But what I mean is you don't have a waste product left over that has to be disposed of with solar, do you?
I don't know enough about the technology of the solar collectors. I know that, and somebody here might. When I was consulting with the aerospace in the early days, we were looking at it, and it was a very expensive procedure because you had to match them up for the stuff that went in, and a lot of those were discards.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you couldn't use them. Well, and also I wanted to say that, you know, if you're going to kick it upstairs, which I think may not at this point be a viable option, but as far as kicking stuff in there, we had a big argument in the early days of, you know, if you're going out into space, do you? And we use some of these products as so-called atomic batteries. Use a radioactive material on a direct heat to electricity transfer. And the question was, with this radioactive material, and we got a lot of stuff up there now that's powered this way, some rather remarkable device, in fact. Should we, if we have to abort it, do you then build it so that it will burn up coming in, or do you make it in a fashion so that it will withstand all of these forces and on impact also will not be destroyed? Mm-hmm. And what at that time we elected to do, or somebody elected to do, with advice was to bring it in solid, even at the risk of hitting one of Fidel Castro's cows. but that's sort of what they've done now, isn't it? I mean, we're worried about something coming back here.
Right.
You know, people are heading north and south to get out of the belt.
And where the belt was.
Yeah, if they can figure out where the belt is. Yeah. And they have. They went through some fantastic procedures. It was almost essentially indestructible. So that is an available technology. The other thing I was going to say, oh yes, I am one. If you're going to nuclear, and realistically for the next decade or two, you have really only two viable options, and that's coal and nuclear, unless you're going to shut things down. And then the concern of many administrators, as you probably are aware, and is that you're going to have probably a change in government. Because, well, how many unemployed are you going to have before you have a revolution? And that's a great concern of the administrators. But if you go nuclear, you have nuclear parks. And it's much of it self-contained within an area that is probably less densely populated. Hanford Lab is an appropriate one, and it was selected rather well. It's in the basalt basin. Mm-hmm. And earthquake, remote possibility, very remote. And it's a lot of, a few people in a very large area, 64,000. Well, you can go for 40 miles and still be inside the reservation. And one of the proposals is, of course, have it above ground. And that, for a considerable period of time, that is not too, probably a bad an idea. And you can make them fairly indestructible. But you also have it available there if you find a use for them. If you've got a lot of ruthenium and strontium, we're using a lot of strontium now, it's a waste product. They're powering remote weather stations in the in Arctic and undersea signaling devices that give location, things like that, and warning lights. These buoys, you know, on the ocean. So you might find a use for them. So then they are available. And so if you have it self-contained, the chemical processing plant and maybe the fuel elements all self-contained, and I think that is probably maybe a good mode. And then we've got the Nevada test site, which is a lot of land, and they've blown a lot of stuff underground, and I suppose no doubt you're considering some of those in those deep caverns, which after an atomic explosion is sort of glassed inside, you know, and you have a low rainfall. So I guess that shows my prejudice.
Okay, I think we'd like to just open this up to the audience. This is a forum, and we'll talk to one another. That's the idea. There's a hand back here.
I guess I want to get one thing clear, that the thing we're discussing tonight is not whether we should have nuclear power.
Right.
That's a conceded given. We're talking about what do you do.
What do you do with the waste product? What do you do with coal?
And it's a waste product. You see, if you're radioactive, and I think he did it right, because you have to look at it in conjunction with others. And if you're in nuclear power, you also have other wastes, independent. I mean, that are non-radioactive.
Okay.
A Boeing engineer made this statement that they could put up a satellite that would generate enough electricity to replace 3 of Grand Coulee dams by sending back to Earth through microwave or some other method. But now it would take 5 years to get this underway, and they would need the help of the government. Now, what would be all of the fallout or waste from such an operation as this?
Would it be just a solar collector?
Or you analyze the hazard.
I would presume it's a solar collector of some.
Yeah, there's a lot of proposals, and it's a very large piece of equipment. because, of course, going out in space, you have the advantage that it takes care of night and day. You got it all the time if it's in the right position, right? So then it's you have to look at what it costs to make it. And all of the waste products associated with it, and I can't list them all for you. Mm-hmm. And then the apparatus to get it into the proper orbit, which is a consumption of quite a bit of material, and also the chance that it doesn't get into orbit and it's going to land on somebody, which some of them have. And then once it's up there, it stays in the proper orbit, and we know now that they don't always do that. And then it's the transmission system. And if you're, it depends on the waveform that you're sending it back to Earth. And you hope that it's directed at the receiver and not at somebody. No, I mean, these are considerations.
Okay, we have a hand over here.
Out of curiosity, how much volume are we talking about waste that, like a Three Mile Island plant, was produced in a year? How much would it fill up? How much? Where do we? Yeah.
Well, it would take me a while, and so maybe somebody here can faster calculate.
Yeah, maybe somebody else has the answer.
At the high level waste, I
would we have to fill a railroad car?
Oh no, not on the high level waste, calcined.
Yeah. You're talking, what, 50,000 tons a year total? With everything, all energy, that's based on what you were saying, every man, woman, and child. And
if everything was nuclear,
yeah,
if all our electricity was nuclear.
Everything was nuclear,
you have to figure out the megawatts, you see. You have to figure out the megawatts production per year that it would take for America, and then you can divide this out.
So it's relatively a small quantity.
Oh, yeah. I calculate when I consulted one time for Sweden, and when Sweden invites a Norwegian, they're in trouble. But I think at that time it's calculated the high level waste for Sweden was probably a container probably this big for the year. for their high-level wages.
What's the, what is the dissension about transporting nuclear waste, well, especially through the town we live in?
Yeah.
Is there a danger or a suspected danger?
There's nothing without risk, although the risk that one of them will mess up your town is less than the risk I had driving to Holden from Pullman by substantial margin. You have a greater risk of having a dynamite truck blow up, or a chlorine gas if you're on a railroad line, and as far as spreading around. Pardon?
I said they have chlorine gas coming into Shelton.
These are far higher risk. And the regulations that I read many years ago as far as transporting these, as far as the containers they use for it and all, it's pretty minimal risk, really. And probably that, and you've hauled a lot of it around. I mean, there's a lot of it been moving back and forth ever since 1945, when they shipped a lot of the stuff out of both Oak Ridge and Hanford, and then assembled the assembly of the devices was at that time at Los Alamos.
Oh, could I add something to that?
Yes, and that one and over there. Somebody up there. You holler when you know.
Well, what I'd say is that the whole transport of at least the waste products is now made possible by the fact that many of our states, even though they have nuclear power plants, refuse to have anything to do with putting their own waste in their own backyard, and instead would rather generate the electricity and then have it dumped somewhere else. So that's one reason why we have all this waste moving all across the country in their storage areas.
Howard, I think you were telling us today that Minnesota will have nothing to do with the storage of any kind of waste.
No land disposal.
It's kind of the same thing as California gets the power from the coal burning plant at Four Corners. They burn the coal over there and contaminate that area, and then they get the electricity.
Okay,
I think up there and then over here okay. And then there.
Go ahead, I have to interrupt. Either Dr. Collins or the nurse is needed for one of the guests.
Okay. Dr. Collins is in one.
There's one problem that that has to do with nuclear waste that hasn't come up yet in the discussion. It is a problem already in Western Germany, and that's has to do with our freedom, our political freedom. And in Germany, there was a large development of nuclear power and many plant openings during the time that the terrorism was going on there. And the problem came up of how the government reacted to the security of the plants and the waste. And the government there acknowledged that they were afraid of terrorist activities and sabotage and things like that. And they reacted against people who protested plants, against students, or anyone who spoke out against it massively. And it was somewhat similar to the reaction against the Vietnam War demonstrators here. People were dismissed from jobs, blacklisted, students lost their place at university, all in the name of security of nuclear power. There are a lot of secret files on people and things like that. I think that's one big problem or potential problem with the waste of nuclear energy that hasn't been mentioned. It's maybe more important to us and touches us more than where the stuff is buried or so, although that could be a problem. It doesn't sound like there's much chance of a nuclear waste blowing up, but if there are blacklists and secret files and things like that, that could hurt us more.
Yeah, the thing at Karlsruhe, another place in Germany, as I understood it, and I was there during some terrorist days, was probably more on the protection of plutonium and the terrorist activity as far as obtaining it too, and for means that they might build a device. But you, that was also considered wrong with what you said.
Is the plutonium the waste? What are we talking about?
Well, it's also the big argument is, should you also use plutonium as fuel? And you see in France, for example, in the development of a breeder reactor, you see that plutonium is used as fuel.
Okay, was there a hand over?
No, I think over.
I just wanted to know if Uncle Sam has to dispose of all the waste for the utilities that use them.
Very interesting.
You want to address that?
Well, I don't know if I can address that. It's becoming an interesting problem, I think, because the government has kind of spearheaded a greater portion of the nuclear power plant drive, I suppose, and has encouraged the development of nuclear plants, I guess, to a certain extent. Yet its technology to be able to do away with the stuff that it leaves has not kept pace with its technology to put them into production. Of course, we've had a lot of problems with that, too. I'm not sure who has the ultimate responsibility. I would think it would rest on the government, because I'm not confident that the utilities will respond to where to put this waste.
Yeah, and the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, of course, of our government, independent organization now, has responsibility for overseeing it. Mm-hmm. And you touch on a big issue, and I've talked to some of the people that are trying to make the decisions on this internationally to control this thing so it doesn't get out of hand. And we know the Indian situation where they set up a reactor there and then pretty soon they have a nuclear device, and now Pakistan, and they're worried about this kind of extension of the delivery systems, and so they're looking at maybe they should establish this make a deal that they get the fuel elements, but they have to return them for reprocessing, you see. So then you have control of all of it. And then to buy the fuel that way. So and that would be then full government control. And I know they've been debating this, and it's a real polemic right now.
I read something about a disposal system where the waste would be encapsulated in. There's an area of the Nazca Plate that's subducting under South America, and to dump these canisters in that area. What development has there been in that? I think really no development except the exchange of ideas about it. It's a very slow process, and probably is so slow that it really is too long range to be considered practical. I think that's mainly where it is. The idea is fine, but it's too slow a way of disposing.
It'd be portable by the time it gets sucked in.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Paul, I think you've had your hand up. Paul is a physicist, Paul Swanson, and maybe we ought to get a voice here from him.
Well, I wasn't expecting to talk, but I will make one comment here concerning the problem that we were just discussing concerning the possibility of terrorist activities. I think that in some way the cat's already out of the bag, because there are new methods being developed right now for the enrichment of uranium. In the past we've used a gaseous diffusion process to enrich U-238 to U-235, and we've had a pretty much of a monopoly on this, and so we can control this, and the government possibly could introduce more strict regulations to control the disbursement of the enriched uranium. However, right now we have a gas centrifuge process that is being worked on, and this can be done on a much smaller basis, so that countries all over the world could literally set up one of these very small units outside the jurisdiction of any controlling agency that we have right now, and make any amount of uranium, enriched uranium, for their own uses, whether they want to use it in a power device or a bomb. And so some of the worries that we have concerning whether plutonium will get into terrorist hands, unfortunately right now there are even bigger problems that we're dealing with, because there are other ways of getting enriched uranium supplies now.
Yeah, I guess you can make a nuclear device, either of the kind of Hiroshima Nagasaki. One of those was a plutonium device, and the other was the uranium-235.
Right.
And that's what he'd say. You can go either way.
Marge and I spoke at Los Alamos a couple of years ago for some meetings and got to know a number of the folk. About 6 weeks ago, a woman came by and said, "I don't know why we don't tell the truth." She said, "Just as you went by me at the door of the church," she said, "the new laser beam technology can reduce all the waste and take away all of its potential tragedy." And she was gone. Left me at the door. I'm too stupid to know it wasn't that anyway. I know they have about 4,000 people working on laser beams. And like your husband is involved in that. And I wondered what she meant. That was the end of her tale.
Well, can you address it on the waste? I can address it on that aspect. You see the big issue probably at Los Alamos, and I used to consult there on the environmental things, and there's a big push on in throughout the world, and the Russians are ahead on this, and Germans, and certainly France are already doing a lot, and there's a big investment on fusion power. How do you get to the high, the plasma and the high and the temperature for a long to have your miniature sun? That's your fusion reactor. And one of the ways that they now feel, and the physicists may address this more, is by laser beam. I think there's also some laser technology development as far as now better utilization of uranium, so that you can extend our present supply of uranium longer. So that's another area that is being utilized in. But as to its utilization in the waste thing, unless they can, you want to address that?
Well, I was just going to comment that I think that there has been some work done on studying concentrating, taking your liquid waste materials and obtaining a much more concentrated waste product. And laser technology has and can play a very vital role in being able to obtain a very concentrated amount, to the point where instead of having huge amount of high-level radioactive material, you can concentrate that down into a very small cube of dry contaminated material, and that could very easily be sunk someplace and would take a great deal of time before it would disperse out into the biosphere.
Take up a lot less room too.
Right, yeah, take up a lot less room too. That's right.
Yeah. I wonder what reaction you have to Leo's suggestion here that maybe we're coming up with nuclear parks, that is, places that we set aside on the surface of the earth and say these are dedicated from now on forever to the managing of this kind of material, which is really a waste product that you're generating along with energy. Any comment or?
And incorporating maybe other the long life, the infinite life stuff too, if it's enough, if it's appropriate, because we have this, right? And we have it parked in some very bad places. And even if we can get better stuff for a source of energy than nuclear, you still have to manage it, and that's your point.
That's
essentially dedicated to this. That's what you're saying.
Would Minnesota welcome one of these parks?
Oh.
I'm assuming they're Minnesotans. In
they want North Dakota to generate it.
Are there geologically suitable areas where the demand is? In the East Coast, for example, a tremendous population, tremendous industry with a tremendous appetite for energy. Are there geologically acceptable areas there for a site storage area?
Hmm. Well, that's not real good. No,
I've been to the Bronx,
New Jersey,
and New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Most of it.
I don't think there's a good answer to your question.
What I point out is that most of the areas I think that are being seriously looked at are the places that are out in the wide open spaces, and they're looking for an area that there's not, it's not very populated, and it also has a suitable geologic formation along with it. I don't think you could sell anybody on the idea of putting a nuclear waste disposal site in the in a populated area in the eastern United States, no matter how deep it was and what it was in. I don't think you could sell it.
Just wouldn't fail politically.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are other countries doing to get rid of their waste?
Well, they're, I don't know. Leo knows a lot more about what other countries are doing.
When you went to Sweden, Leo, what were they doing with it?
Well, they were saying no to nuclear. And gee, Sweden is in a tough position right now. You are Swedes. You better, you know, feel sorry for them. Because, I told the Swedes that, you know, the sun hardly ever shines there, so they can't do much with solar unless they get it upstairs, you see. The tides aren't that good as far as the source. Whenever they're going to build a hydropower plant, they hire Norwegians to lay in front of the bulldozers so they can't build a dam. And they and they got forests, they can burn them up, I guess, but that won't last very long. They have no coal, and they have no oil. And if they think the Norwegians are going to sell them oil cheaper than Arabs, they got another guest coming. They probably charge $1 more. So they got the wind mainly out of their parliament. So, you know, they got a real problem. They do have uranium, and they have some of their, in their defense apparatus, you know, they got a lot of rock there. And in their defense, they utilize some of that as sort of impregnable. And I imagine this is where they'd consider it, and they were talking about this at the time. Germany has a problem. Is Will still here?
No.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been to Karlsruhe, and I know they were probably storing some of it there, but I can't say for them. And England has a place set aside. I think they sent it to Ireland. don't quote me on that.
How large a site do you need to store, like a whole desert?
Well, depends on who you talk to. Closest neighbor, I guess, is who decides.
Like the whole state of Nevada.
No. For a lot of it, all you need is one deep well for quite a while.
That's right.
And monitoring system to see what's happening.
I think somebody over here has been trying to get at us for a long time.
What are your professional state?
Well, I haven't heard her say that all of the waste, but as a storage for some of it, as a federal reserve, I don't have a lot of problem with it.
Now, what do the people of the state have to say about it, though? Anything?
Yes. That's where it really gets decided, is in the politicians, finally. And you must remember that really is you. And if you tell them what to do, they make it possible, but the people still have the voice to change these things or to do what they think should be done. And so it is our problem. I think it's our church problem. I think this is not just a secular problem. It's something that it involves all of us. And we'll have to take our stand as to what we are going to do with these things. And I think waste, you know, at this point, instead of really looking at where we are in terms of national product, what we really are faced with is gross national garbage. You know, that's the other side of the gross national product. And there has to be a trade-off between gross national garbage and gross national product. And that's where we are, and we have to decide it. Now,
yeah,
who hasn't spoken?
I don't know. Can I?
Could
what is,
Bill address that as a geologist?
What's the geological situation? Is it just in basalt? What's the?
You mean
I'm not that familiar with.
No, in the.
In
yeah.
Washington?
Yeah, is it just a big well in the ground, or I'm not that familiar with it?
No, it's a lava flow.
Lava flow area.
Oh, on top? Is it going to be a surface?
No, it would be below surface, but they want to get it below this shield.
Are you sure the latest proposal is below surface?
I was in Hanford about a month ago.
Yeah, because one of their proposals, you know, was above ground over in a remote area.
The man I spoke to was talking about below ground.
I haven't dealt a lot with basalt, and it really strikes me, basalt is one of the more permeable rocks that I know of. It tends to have large holes in it, and I would at this point feel a little safer with salt, although I don't know, I can't give you a professional opinion because I just don't know that much about what work they've done in basalt, but I know they are considering it as a possibility. So a lot of the experts don't seem to have a problem with it. So,
depends on what the material is in the form in which it's stored.
Right.
Glass.
Glass.
Now, someone who hasn't spoken.
Yeah, Rudy. We've been talking about nuclear waste. You mentioned coal waste. I just within the past week came face to face was included in trying to solve a problem. At Washington State University, they burn 40,000 tons of coal a year there, which generates about 20%, maybe 25% of the electricity they use at Washington State University. They end up with 2,400 tons of ash every year. They've already got a pretty big pile there. They're wondering what to do with it. It's going to look pretty soon like the tailings out here. What do we do with it? That's for a university, 16,000 people, and 20 to 25% of the power that they need. You can imagine what it would mean for a city like New York, Seattle, whatever. That's to me, really struck home.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
okay.
Can I comment on that?
Uh-huh.
Fly ash and the waste associated with coal, I think it used to be that they would just kind of stick it in a pit somewhere until they found out that the mysterious force called groundwater moves through this stuff and just kind of takes all the real neat stuff out of there and moves it along, and it ends up in water supplies and everything else like that. So that's definitely a problem.
It's a pollution.
I analyzed some of that stuff for cadmium. Leo mentioned cadmium.
Right.
There's enough cadmium in the fly ash that I would not want to put it on my land because it would be taken up by plants, and I simply wouldn't want to eat the plant material grown on it.
Okay, I had a hand right back then.
Yeah, I'm wondering how safe the temporary kind of storage that they're using now is. You keep hearing about leaks at Hanford and radioactive mice and tumbleweeds and that kind of thing. The vessel that you're storing this in until we decide what we're going to do with it.
No, it's a problem.
Yeah, and that's low-level waste. Principally, and I think that they were. I think they could have been more energetic relative to replacing those tanks. Now the leaks, of course, and you have to realize that in a situation like this, they have really hundreds and hundreds of wells over the Hanford project, which are at least in my time there. They checked them very frequently for contamination in the periphery to see is there any movement, because their concern was, does it get in the groundwater? Now, many of those elements, of course, going through the soil are picked up and held, for the most part, in a very short span of space. And as of the last reading, when I talked to some of the people down there, this was not a concern as far as is the contamination of groundwater or the Columbia River as a major stream.
I want to just break in a minute. Yeah. On these forums, we try to go for an hour, which we have done now, and then we call a sort of a temporary halt so that people who want to go can do so graciously. and also to have a chance to say thanks to our presenters. However, we don't necessarily want to cut off the discussion if there are still issues to be raised. We just suggest that everybody take a little chance for a stretch, and those of you maybe from up above, come on down and we'll consolidate a little closer down here if there are still some things that aren't covered. We'll say our thanks to those presenting.